I want to share with you tonight four stories that have been an inspiration to me and that have had an effect, an impact upon my life. The first one is the Desiderata. This was written by Max Ehrman back in the 1920s, and it was found in old St. Paul's Church, or at least that's one theory about it. But he wrote it to be a weekly devotional. They sent a weekly flyer around to all the members of the church, and people really liked it, thought it inspired them. So it was pretty popular for a while, but then it got lost. And now it has resurfaced. It resurfaced in the 60s, and everybody thought it was some kind of hippy-dippy thing. But it really did come from a Presbyterian man who I think had a very, very good take on life and on his religion. Go placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexatious to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter. For always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, nor in the face of all aridity and disenchantment. For in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nature, strength of spirit, or nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune. But do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born out of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a whole discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations. In the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful and strive to be happy. I dreamed I had an interview with God. "Come in," God said. "So, you would like to interview me?" "If you have the time," I said. God smiled and said, "My time is eternity, and it's enough to do everything. What questions do you have in mind to ask me?" "Well, first of all, what surprises you most about mankind?" And God answered, "That they get bored of being children and are in a rush to grow up and then long to be children again. That they lose their health to make money and then lose their money to restore their health. That by thinking anxiously about the future, they forget the present, such that they live neither for the present nor for the future. That they live as if they will never die, and they die as if they had never lived. God's hands took mine, and we were silent for a while, and then I asked, as a parent, what are some of life's lessons you want your children to learn? God replied with a smile, to learn that they cannot make anyone love them. What they can do is let themselves be loved. To learn that what is most valuable is not what they have in their lives, but who they have in their lives. To learn that it is not good to compare themselves to others. All will be judged individually on their own merits, not as a group, on a comparison basis. To learn that a rich person is not the one who has the most, but who needs the least. To learn that it only takes a few seconds to open profound wounds in a person we love, and that it takes many years to heal them. To learn to forgive by practicing forgiveness. To learn that there are persons that love them dearly, but simply do not know how to express or show their feelings. To learn that money can buy everything but happiness. To learn that two people can look at the same thing and see it totally different. To learn that a true friend is someone who knows everything about them and likes them anyway. To learn that it is not always enough that they be forgiven by others, but that they have to forgive themselves. I sat there for a while enjoying the moment. I thanked him for his time and for all that he has done for me and my family. And he replied, anytime, I'm here 24 hours a day. All you have to do is ask for me, and I'll answer. When I say I am a Christian, I'm not shouting, I've been saved. I'm whispering, I get lost. That's why I chose this way. When I say I am a Christian, I don't speak with human pride. I'm confessing that I stumble, needing God to be my guide. When I say I am a Christian, I'm not trying to be strong. I'm professing that I'm weak and pray for strength to carry on. When I say I am a Christian, I'm not bragging of success. I'm admitting that I failed and cannot ever pay the debt. When I say I am a Christian, I don't think I know it all. I submit to my confusion, asking humbly to be taught. When I say I am a Christian, I'm not claiming to be perfect. My flaws are all too visible, but God believes I'm worth it. When I say I am a Christian, I still feel the sting of pain. I have my share of heartache, which is why I seek his name. When I say I am a Christian, I do not wish to judge. I have no authority. I only know I'm loved. I was at the grocery store buying some early potatoes. I noticed a small boy, delicate of bone and feature, ragged but clean, hungrily appraising the basket of freshly picked green beans, peas. I paid for my potatoes, but was also drawn to the display of the fresh green peas. I'm a pushover for creamed peas and new potatoes. And pondering the peas, I couldn't help overhearing the conversation between Mr. Miller, the store owner, and the ragged boy next to me. Hello, Barry. How are you today? Hello, Mr. Miller. Fine, thank you. Just admiring them peas. They sure look good. They are good, Barry. How's your ma? Oh, fine. She's getting stronger all the time. Good. Anything I can help you with? No, sir. Just admiring the peas. Would you like to take some home? Asked Mr. Miller. No, sir. Got nothing to pay for them with. Well, what have you got to trade me for some of those peas? All I have is my prize marble here. Is that right? Let me see it, said Mr. Miller. Here 'tis. She's a dandy. I can see that. Only thing is, this one's blue, and I sort of go for red. Do you have a red one like this at home? Not exactly, but almost. Tell you what, you take this sack of peas home with you, and the next trip this way, let me look at that red marble, Mr. Miller told the boy. Sure will. Thanks, Mr. Miller. Mrs. Miller, who had been standing nearby, came over to help me. And with a smile, she said, there are two other boys like him in our community, and all three are in very poor circumstances. Now, Jim just loves to bargain with them for peas and apples, tomatoes, or whatever. And when they come back with their red marbles, as they always do, he decides he doesn't like red after all, and sends them home with a bag of produce to get a green marble or an orange one. When they come on their next trip to the store, that is. I left the store smiling to myself, impressed with this man. A short time later, I moved to Colorado, but I never forgot the story of this man, the boys, and their bartering for marbles. Several years went by, and each more rapid than the previous one, and just recently, I had the occasion to visit some old friends in that Idaho community, and while I was there, I learned that Mr. Miller had died. They were having his visitation that evening, and knowing my friends wanted to go, I agreed to accompany them. Upon arrival at the mortuary, we fell into line to meet the relatives of the deceased and to offer whatever words of comfort we could. Ahead of us in the line were three young men. One was in an army uniform, and the other two wore nice haircuts, dark suits, and white shirts, all very professional looking. They approached Mrs. Miller, standing composed and smiling by her husband's casket. Each of the young men hugged her, kissed her on the cheek, spoke briefly with her, and moved on to the casket. Her misty light blue eyes followed them as one by one each young man stopped briefly and placed his own warm hand over the cold, pale hand in the casket. Each left the mortuary awkwardly, wiping his eyes. Our turn came to meet Mrs. Miller, and I told her who I was and reminded her of the story from those many years ago, and what she had told me about her husband's bartering for marbles. With her eyes glistening, she took my hand and led me to the casket. Those three young men who just left were the boys I told you about. They just told me how they appreciated the things Jim traded with them. And now at last, when Jim could no longer change his mind about the color or size, they came to pay their debt. We've never had a great deal of wealth in this world, she confided, but right now Jim would consider himself the richest man in Idaho. With loving gentleness, she lifted the lifeless fingers of her deceased husband, and resting underneath were three exquisitely shined red marbles.